From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, May 28th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listener support and by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The state is reporting 52 more cases of COVID-19 for a total active caseload of 703. In all, the state has seen 2,189 positive cases, and there were 3 new deaths recorded today for a total of 84. As the number of COVID-19 cases in Maine rises to 2,189, the state CDC is tracking 3 new outbreaks. 5 cases have been confirmed at Milestone Recovery in Portland, 3 at the Auburn-based Happy Haven Home for Individuals with Intellectual Disabilities. And Dr. Nirav Shah says the CDC has also identified an outbreak at Tambrands in Auburn. And as Maine prepares to open hotels, retail stores, and state parks on June 1st, state courts are also taking steps to resume operations. The process will be gradual, and as Susan Sharon reports, jury trials won't be held for several months.
For the past 3 months, most court proceedings have been curtailed, with a few exceptions. Cases involving injury or death, protection orders, and matters related to constitutional rights. Beginning June 1st, courthouses will open, with new protocols in place. Anyone entering a courthouse must wear a face covering, use hand sanitizer made available at the door, and follow social distancing measures. No more than 10 people will be allowed in a courtroom at one time, with no more than 50 on a floor. According to a COVID-19 management plan signed by Acting Chief Justice Andrew Mead, video and telephone conferences are the strongly preferred option for all court proceedings. But beginning June 15th, arraignments, juvenile detention hearings, motions for bail reviews, and other matters may be scheduled in person. And in July, grand jury proceedings can be scheduled and held in person. Jury trials are not scheduled to begin until after September 7th. In all cases, court events will be arranged to prevent large numbers of people from entering and exiting a courthouse at any given time. Any resurgence of COVID-19 may result in a change in the plan. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And in weather tonight, we'll have overcast skies with lows in the low to mid-60s. Tomorrow, cloudy with some showers and thunder in the north. Very humid with highs in the mid-60s down east to the low 80s interior south. On a day when the Maine Center for Disease Control is reporting 52 new cases of COVID-19 and 3 more deaths, state officials were forced to deal with the possibility that the virus has infected part of its response team. Steve Missler has more.
Thursday morning began with 7 employees in the state's Emergency Operations Center calling out sick. 3 work for the Maine Emergency Management Agency, or MEMA. 2 work for the Maine CDC, and 2 others are National Guard members. MEMA Director Peter Rogers.
They had similar conditions where there was fever, chills. Some of them had aches and pains and some joint fatigue.
Such flu-like symptoms are consistent with symptoms of COVID-19, raising the prospect that half of the state's on-site response team at MEMA has been infected. Testing of those workers was underway Thursday, and results are expected as early as Friday. But in the meantime, MEMA Director Rogers, who works in the same facility as the affected workers, was forced to work from home. So was CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah, who works part of his day out of the same facility and holds the daily press briefing from there, too. Neither Shah nor Rogers believe they've come in close contact with the affected workers, but both held Thursday's press briefing via an internet conferencing service.
But I just would like to repeat, there has been no interruption in their state's response to COVID-19. We plan for continuity of operations situations, and this is one of those situations.
In a press statement, the CDC said Governor Janet Mills and members of her cabinet have not had close contact with the sick workers. The governor led Wednesday's press briefing from the MEMA offices, and she was joined by her health commissioner, Jean Lambrew, and economic development chief, Heather Johnson. Nevertheless, it's unclear how the seven workers got sick at the same time. MEMA Director Peter Rogers says the workers mainly play an administrative role, and he says all of the 14-member response team are screened daily for symptoms and work at physically distanced tables inside of a large room.
Folks that have identified are all from different pods, so the distancing is interesting.
The MEMA offices are tucked inside a large building that is home to several state agencies, including the Maine Labor Department. But according to the CDC, officials do not believe that sick employees had close contact with workers from other agencies. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
New research suggests that the U.S. lobster industry could place fewer traps in the water and still gain just as much profit. And that finding could play a role in the debate over what should be required of Maine lobstermen to reduce entanglements with endangered North Atlantic right whales. Fred Beber has more.
The study was published this week in the peer-reviewed Marine Policy Journal. Lead researcher Hannah Myers is a graduate student at the University of Alaska's College of Fisheries and Ocean Studies. She took a close look at landings and other data from lobster fishing territory that crosses the International Hague Line between Nova Scotia and Maine.
So we found that Canadian fishers in the Gulf of Maine caught about the same amount of lobster using 7.5 times less effort than Maine fishers on the U.S. side.
The researchers also found that while the Canadians spent fewer days at sea and fished fewer traps, the traps they pulled had almost 4 times as many lobsters in them. Myers cautions that there are a number of variables that could change the picture from one fishing zone or season to the next. But the evidence shows that reduced effort does not necessarily mean less success. In fact, when the researchers looked at an area off Massachusetts that over the last decade has been periodically closed to protect the right whales, they discovered that annual lobster landings there actually went up.
As far as why catch might actually be higher with a closure, there's a lot of biological reasons for that and other variables that confound it. But in some cases, it might be analogous to farmers letting their fields lie fallow for a period of time to improve productivity later on.
The report suggests that in areas where lobster fishing is not as efficient as it could be, new whale protection rules that reduced effort could boost lobster abundance and fishermen's profits. Federal regulators and courts are now considering measures such as closures, lower trap limits, or limits on the number of ropes allowed per trap. Maine's commissioner of the Department of Marine Resources and the Maine Lobstermen's Association had no immediate comments. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Beber.
And more than a third of all eligible voters are under the age of 39, but historically far fewer of them actually vote. In 2018, only about 36% voted. This year, political parties and advocacy groups are trying to get younger voters engaged through registration drives. But as Mal Leary reports, the restrictions of the pandemic have limited the ways in which they can operate.
Political scientists like to point out that if younger voters cast ballots at the rate of those over the age of 65, they could change the results of many elections. It is why so many successful campaigns have invested time and money in get-out-the-vote efforts to identify their supporters and get them to the polls. But this year, that's a challenge for field organizers like Josh Velez of Next Gen Maine, a campaign effort started by former Democratic presidential candidate Tom Steyer.
We have to contact young voters in one way or another 7 to 8 times before they will get out and vote.
And campaigns have lost some key tools they have used to make those contacts. No door-to-door canvassing, no large campaign rallies, no country affairs or sporting events. Julian Snow, director of the Next Gen effort in Maine, says the effort to connect with potential voters is now going out through social media platforms such as Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. But he says phone banks are still being used to encourage people to register and vote by absentee ballot.
We can reach back out in a couple of weeks and inquire to see if they'd gotten the application or if they'd filled it out correctly. And if not, we can help them with that. And then, you know, we can reach out again.
And Snow says while getting a potential supporter registered is crucial, it won't matter if they don't actually vote. Progressive campaigns aren't alone in this challenge. Republican National Committee spokeswoman Nina McLaughlin says efforts to engage voters in Maine are using all of the social media tools, phone banks, and virtual meetings. In an email, McLaughlin says there have been 120 training sessions for volunteers and over 190 virtual meetings of supporters aimed at electing Republicans to offices at all levels. But younger voters are still a special challenge.
Youth voting levels are always lower than older.
University of Maine political scientist Mark Brewer says the youth vote can make a difference, particularly in a close contest.
There have been some campaigns and some election cycles that have been able to get younger voters more engaged than others, not to the level of their older counterparts, but certainly more engaged.
Brewer said that was true in the 2008 election of Barack Obama as president. Campaign strategists are scrambling to find new ways to reach young voters this year. And even some of the established methods, such as phone banks, have had to change. Gone are the centralized operations with dozens of phones in a room. Now it's individual volunteers calling from home. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for the Month in Review. I'm Nora Flaherty.